Yes, hello, folks. Welcome to the weekly Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Phil Brown, joined with my mate, the excellent James Rhodes. Monday morning here in the United States, almost Monday afternoon. Of course, the day after Manchester United qualified for the FA Cup final. I didn't think this was possible, where qualifying for a cup final could feel, in some cases, worse than a defeat. I probably felt worse yesterday, James, after that game than I felt in some of the games United have lost this season. We will, of course, get into that. We'll get into the appointment of Jason Wilcox, the Thomas Tuchel speculation, some of the other speculation about some internal issues, and the reaction to Manchester United going through, which maybe has been the most entertaining and satisfying part for this for me of this for me is watching the absolute outrage of people that the offside rule actually applied for a team playing Manchester United. But we'll get into all that. First of all, mate, how you doing?
Good, yeah. Not too bad. I wasn't able to really stew too much right around the game. I had to run to coaching my son's team, and so I was doing that for a couple of hours afterwards and wasn't able to mentally let myself get into a hole from watching what I had just watched and going through all of that. So not too bad.
I actually had to do the same with my daughter's team and lost.
You get some so, sun too, because I definitely got my.
It doesn't take much. I put the bins out, but I get melanoma, you know. It was a nice day yesterday. We lost, and of course, my family's standing behind me saying, "Fire the coach," you know. So, but my daughter's game, but nonetheless. I want to talk about yesterday, because obviously a lot of different emotions. Some of them, I was like, am I being snobby here by feeling this way? What I saw yesterday, I didn't actually believe was possible for Manchester United. 70 minutes in a game where they were strolling, right? Completely in control, and Coventry surrendered that control. And there's been very few points this season where I felt the game was totally safe because of United's capacity to find a way to lose any football game. And maybe I thought 3-0, this is secure. And, you know, Ten Hag takes off Garnacho. Some people are really angry about that. I wasn't. Garnacho, 65 minutes. You know, he's played a lot of football, take him off, fine. You know, Mane, fine. I'm thinking, if an 18 and 19-year-old are the difference between you conceding three goals against Coventry or not, then we have serious, serious problems, okay? And I'm not meaning to exonerate Ten Hag here by any means, because I'll give you my criticisms and my concerns on him too. But again, 20 minutes to go. I don't care if your manager's sitting on the bench high on shrooms. You should be able to see out a football game against Coventry City with the knowledge and know-how that's on the pitch, right? I don't care what your manager tells you, unless he's telling you to throw the game, right? There's no excuse for not being able to see it out. Predictably, Coventry score, and you can just see the mantle collapse. It was almost Newport all over. You know, the deflection flies the top corner. And, it was, I'll get into some of the reasons why I'll let you come in first, but it was an absolutely horrendous indictment on those players, the football club. And, they're sitting there saying at the end of the game about being embarrassed, but you were the ones that let it happen.
Yeah, I know, and it's such a challenging topic because it is completely unacceptable, you know, and on so many levels. But yet it keeps happening, and it's crazy because you could look at it and say that United are unlucky at times, right? The first goal was a bit unlucky, right? Another deflecting kind of looping one. second goal was that the penalty, the second goal?
Second goal was a deflection in the top corner. First one,
right, yeah.
Then scored.
Yep. And then the third goal was a penalty that might have been a little dubious, in my opinion, too, because we've seen that not called very recently. I could see it being a penalty, but I've seen it not called so many times. It's another just poor officiating in terms of consistency. The offside is stupid. It's offside. It's offside. There's nothing to debate about that. The rule's been applied consistently everywhere now. It is what it is. But it's challenging because I look at the team and I think the same team strolled through the first half and such to get up 3-0. It's the same players, you know? And when you look at it, and it's kind of why you can't separate everything out when you're critiquing really anybody, because you look at it and you say, well, it's not the manager who got them up 3-0 and the players who lost it. And it's not the players who got them up 3-0 and the manager who lost it. Mm-hmm. It's the players and the manager that got them up 3-0 and the players and the manager that got them to lose that lead. And, you know, so anything that's said in terms of like, you know, I do think that obviously mid-game, there's practically no excuse for the players giving up a lead like that, regardless of who's on the pitch. At the same time, we've seen in-game changes have a really poor effect recently, and whether that's down to misassessment of the players or the people who are coming on just being, you know, useless. But I don't even know. I don't even know where to start with it. It seemed practically impossible. It's like, I don't even see how that keeps that can happen. But and I will say it's different too. Chelsea conceding the lead, I understand why that happened. The game was incredibly chaotic from start to finish. It was up and down. We could have conceded many more times earlier. We could have scored earlier. There's been games like that. Brentford should have conceded 5 or 6 goals before conceding that one later. It's just a matter of time. The Coventry one is almost completely illogical because there was nothing, absolutely nothing for them for a long time until that last 20 minutes.
So here's what I see. Some of this I brought up before. And I'll even go back to last week against Bournemouth. If you look at when United concede a goal, I want you to look at all the defenders, okay?
Yeah.
Because there's no reaction. They stand there, hands on their hips. Maybe you'll see someone throw a hand. There's absolutely nobody communicating. Nobody reminding players of the responsibility. Nobody telling players where they need to be. Nobody telling Dalot he's too high or Wan-Bissaka to get here. Nobody organizing the defense. This is why they concede on set pieces, because there's zero communication, right? Willy Kambala last week against Bournemouth makes a mistake, right? He gets done on the inside by Solanke. Solanke scores, young defender. Nobody goes up to him after the goal, puts the arm around him and says, you're okay, you know, calm down, you know, I got you, you know. That, and this happens every single time. Zero communication in that defense. This is a problem, James, because Wan-Bissaka has a concentration issue, right?
Yeah.
Wan-Bissaka is very good with the ball in front of him. You know, he's like Pong. You know, ball comes down and bang, 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 bang. Right? But he has no sense of awareness as a defender. And mentally, he switches off. And unless you've committed a murder or a robbery, you shouldn't be wearing gloves in January, in April, by the way. But I'm looking at him, I'm going, go back to the Newcastle game, right? Anthony Gordon flies over his shoulder, 1-0, because he's completely unaware of the danger that's behind him. Brentford, right? Ball knocked over the top. Wan-Bissaka did exactly the same thing in the Brentford game that he did in the Coventry game that he got away with the skin of his teeth. He's ball watching late in the game, of course, in defense, right? Not being aware of what's around him, where the line is coming up, right? He plays Ivan Toney onside, Ivan Toney scores, right? The Brentford equalizer, because he's sitting way deep, too deep after that game. The Chelsea game, right? Gets caught wrong side. Gives a penalty away because does the sense of danger going past them, right? The Liverpool game gives a penalty away against Harvey Elliott. Same thing, okay? Not paying attention. Yesterday, the Coventry, Coventry are played, you barely get their onside, and the ball comes across, and he's standing in space. Space doesn't score goals, players do. There's two players, Coventry players, right? The lad Hadji, I think it was, it scored the goal, and there's another one back post, and the Wan-Bissaka standing right between you. I mean, you go and attack the ball, son, right? If that ball comes across, it's going to go. If it goes back post, I'm trusting the keeper, right? But for the player in that position to get the ball over my head perfectly and past my keeper to the back post is unlikely. But it's highly likely that he's going to hit the first man. So you go and attack the ball. You don't stand there. You don't stand in the middle. And he stood in the middle. He's also being played as a left back when he has no left foot. So if you attack, he does what Anthony does. He stops, pulls the ball back, and then the attack is over. Yeah. And so this is Ten Hag. I don't know why Ten Hag plays him on the left. But
yeah, Dallow was pretty good there when he played a few games earlier this season.
He has played there and can play there. I mean, not a great left back, but I don't understand why Ten Hag plays him on. Defensively, they're slow. There's no communication. There's nobody organizing that defense. There's no leadership. And it's not hard to see why they're conceding goals.
No, it isn't. And it's kind of obvious that it keeps happening over and over, same kind of pattern, same things that happen over and over. And there isn't. There really just isn't all the things that make a solid team. And I think that's the biggest issue is that, I think most winning teams kind of start with security from the back, right? I think that's been the philosophy for a long time of building a football team is to build security from the back. And it's true of a lot of sports, about defense wins championships and all that. Arsenal, I know people have talked about the possession, things like that, but they've been the best defensive team, I think, in England all season by a significant margin, followed by City. And there's different ways to defend, but it really comes down to, that kind of organization, that setup. And there's too many things missing to even look at it and say there's even a shred of like, that's exactly how we're setting up to play. And we know it. And there's a single thing here that goes wrong. It's just kind of chaotic. And then that kind of sums up everything that's been happening is it's chaotic. And an attack, it's kind of the same thing in a lot of ways. I see, in recent weeks, the way we score is still fairly chaotic when we do score goals, even the ones we made them off of. I mean, it's good. I'm glad to see we got a set piece goal, off Harry Maguire. First one, get very few of those. We should be getting a lot more.
By the way, Dan deserves huge credit for the season he's had. I would argue that this has been Maguire's best season since Solskjaer.
Yeah, and him saying, which is the truth, he's injured. He's playing through it. He hasn't trained all week, I give credit Scott McTominay. He had one training session as well and came back into the side, and I thought he played well. And when he came off, it didn't help the situation. He doesn't always provide a ton, but he scored the opening goal to get things going. And there's players who are really putting it in still, despite everything going on. And definitely Maguire deserves a lot of praise for that, because he didn't have to, he's nearly gone in the preseason. He's done quite well and played more games than anyone else at center back this year. But it is chaotic. And, like we keep saying, I don't see any changes. It's like every week I don't see any changes. I don't expect to see any changes. I don't expect to see anything happen between now and the end of the season. That's a problem, but it's been like that for 2 months now. Nothing changes week after week.
The injuries are unbelievable. Right. And they are going to have an impact. United don't have a great squad, James. Yeah. Right. So once you get injuries to a couple of key players, their levels drop significantly. I think obviously Lisandro Martinez is a huge loss, not just because he's left footed, but because he is someone that has leadership in defense. Mm-hmm. He is someone that understands how to organize. It's really difficult for me to have an opinion on Ten Hag I'm completely committed to, because one day I'll be certain that he needs to be sacked, and the next day I'm kind of like, and this is the thing, is there's always an anomaly. if you said to me without watching the season, if you'd have said to me when he took the job last season, said, okay, he's going to finish top three. His first season, he's going to get to two cup finals. Second season, he's going to get to another cup final. He's going to have a rash of injuries. Key players, so he's not going to finish top four. Should we sack him? I would say no. I would say, okay, I can understand the club's being complete turmoil. You know, it's trying to be sold. And I think there's another part to this that people don't realize is just the absolute how United have been completely gutted internally of actual staff, you know, to handle professional demands, right? There's just, I mean, it's unbelievable. So, you know, he hasn't really been managing a football club that is competing with their rivals in how they're set up and tension. I mean, he's basically been managing a football club that's in transition to being sold. So there's lots of mitigating things you could say about Ten Hag, say that, you know, he shouldn't be sacked. But then there's the other reality and what you're seeing on the pitch.
Yeah.
And to me, there are certain things you have to be able to do. You have to be able to adapt your tactics in a way. You should be able to adapt and get your players to adapt to hold on to a game against Coventry City 3-0. If you can't hold on to a lead 3-0 against Coventry City, these players psychologically will never feel safe in the game of football. And you have to be able to find ways to win it that are simple. Right. I mean, Coventry at 3-0 had given up. The only way they're getting back in the game is if you give them a way back in. And United will always give you a way back in. But to me, I think there's certain things players have to take responsibility for. And that game said as much about the players to me as it did about anyone else. Right? I don't care who's sitting on your sideline.
Yeah.
Right. There's enough ability on that pitch to see out a game against Coventry City. And if you need Ten Hag to manage you through the last 20 minutes, you shouldn't be at Manchester United. I'm looking at one. If there isn't enough ability on that pitch, how much are we overrating some of these players? I think to me, like, I wouldn't lose any sleep if United got rid of him. Right? Now, they're bringing in Jason Wilcox to do a proper technical evaluation, which is exactly what should happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be just a coincidence, a situation where he's unfortunate, you know, with timing, and, you know, it's just, it happens a lot. Lots of managers have one experience where it doesn't work out and they go on and recover. But as we said before, the question becomes, how certain can we be that he is the answer to the future? And that really is the key question.
Well, exactly. And that's where you can go kind of back and forth on it. But I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, when you look at it, you say you can think of and come up with many, many valid reasons why he struggled this year, but not a lot of good reasons why, when your aim is to win titles, he's the best man to go forward, which should be the question. That would be my question every single day, every year when we're looking at this team. Same of the players, same of the management staff. That's why we looked at it and said, is John Murtaugh the best sporting director for Manchester United to take them to winning Champions Leagues and winning Premier League titles and having the best recruitment in the world? No. So he's not there. Was Richard Arnold the best CEO to do the same thing for United? No. So he's not there. Was Darren Fletcher the right technical director to assess the levels of coaching, performance, all of that are going on the pitch? No. So he's not there. They moved him to a position where he might be the best guy, you know, which is in this sort of pathway to the first team from the academy, where he has a ton of experience and is really well-liked. So it's about putting people and saying who are the best people to do things and putting them in those positions. And the same question will be asked of the manager. The same question will be asked of every single position on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Do we have someone who's good enough or not? And, you know, in some respects, you know, when you talk about the players and all of that, it's a little bit challenging because you can't replace a full squad overnight. It's impossible, right? We've seen how badly that can go too when you replace too many players at once. You can replace a manager pretty much overnight. And you can, same as you can replace any individual staff. And it just so happens that with a playing squad, it takes a lot more time and you have a lot more people you've got to get through to make those kind of changes and make the replacements. But it's hard to look at it and say, if your discussion is about getting the best people to the top level, is he the guy? And I think, obviously, we'll talk about quite a bit of it and some things I wanted to share on it. But I think that is, in general, the question. And yeah, it may be down to bad timing. It may be down to the fact that because the structures have been not in place and because these things haven't been handled for the last few years, your 400 million in transfers in that have mostly not worked out as of now, and a lot of time in, and it can be really hard to claw back from that for anybody.
You know, I would say one thing, we're agreeing 99.9% of that. I would say that some, you know, Lisandro Martinez injuries to say, which aren't Ten Hag's fault, which I would say he worked out, right?
I would agree.
You know, Onana probably at this point.
Onana's been great.
Right? Yeah. I would say that he was worked out. Anthony is obviously a question mark. Casemiro's first season worked out, hasn't second season, no question. And he has a big problem. I think that the way he had his penalty was really indicative of an awful lot towards his whole attitude.
I mean, the way he tried to run after anybody, yeah, in the second half was pretty bad. What to say about that?
I would say that there's some of his signings have worked out. The Mason Mount one, I said this a while ago on this podcast, James, and I don't mean to be cruel, but I don't ever see a time when Mason Mount will be fit for Manchester United for a consistent run of games. I think this, what we're seeing right now, is exactly what we'll see for the rest of his time at United. And I swear to God, I hope I'm wrong on that. This is a guy that had been used sparingly, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes, still getting injured. I mean, the injuries are borderline ridiculous. I've just finished watching a lad run across the whole of Africa and not get injured. How can Man United players not, you know, pick up all these injuries? And going, this is something that, I mean, actually, I was looking at Mourinho's 2016-17 season and he had more injuries than Ten Hag, and going, this is insane. This is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's too much just to dismiss and say, it's down to intensity. It's down to how many games. Some of these players that are getting injured repeatedly are not playing that much.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That has to be looked at. And I'm sure there's some culpability with medical staff. Maybe Ten Hag is responsible for it. I'm not saying that's not the case, but I just can't be certain about that. His other signing, Hoyland. He ended up a problem with Hoyland. Big problem. And to be fair, it's a problem in world football in general. And how do you get a number 9 into the game when you have inverted wingers? If you look at Holland, right? I mean, Real Madrid's a perfect example. They suffocated him, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, he hasn't scored away at a top 6 team all season, right?
Yeah.
He is a brilliant finisher, probably the best finisher in the game. But the problem is, the way these teams play now with these inverted wingers, they're essentially occupying the striker's space.
Yeah.
And I mean, even if you look at McTominay's goal, Hoyland should have been there. That's exactly where Hoyland should have been. He should have been at the highest player forward. When that ball comes across, Hoyland pulls back. That should be the opposite. McTominay should be the deeper player, and the Hoyland should be sitting on the last defender picking up those scraps. So some of it, you know, I'm a little disappointed in a bit, right? But some of it is not, you know, Ten Hag's fault. I mean, if you look at the strikers, right? Barcelona's number 9 is, what, 34, 35? Because there is no obvious alternative to Lewandowski, right? Harry Kane, 30, right? You know, who was PSG striker in their first game against Barcelona? Asensio, right? Arsenal's is Havertz. You know, Liverpool are rotating between, you know, Jota and you know, Salah and Darwin, sometimes Nunez is the number 9, right? And this position is disappearing.
It is.
Because of the way teams play. And so, you know, you're getting these number 9s, 10s that play in that hole that pull center backs out. This is a big problem. And, you know, this is something where United tried to make adjustments with Marcus Rashford and basically swap responsibility with Garnacho. So they wanted Garnacho to play in the role that Rashford played last season, close to the number nine in the box, and be the player that occupies that space. And they wanted to take Rashford and play him deeper, play him wider, right? So inevitably, he's not occupying the spaces in the box. Now, people can criticize his form and all, that's totally fine. I think it's also affected by the fact he doesn't have a left back behind him, which is definitely an issue. But I would say that Marcus has some big decisions to make this summer. I actually wouldn't be against him. United send the Rashford, let's loan you out for a year. Go get your head straight, go play Spain, whatever, get away from Manchester. Get whatever it is, because there's clearly something not 100% right. Now, he's been playing with an injury since Forest, right? Which never gets mentioned. But, you know, I don't like the abuse. It gets, this is something that really disappoints me. I mean, we're supposed to be United fans. Criticism. But there are people that had Rashford have scored, the weekend would have been devastated. I don't get that. You know, and so, and then they're claiming he's doing a Saka. I mean, the lad's injured. He's been injured since Forest.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and even on the tackle where he got injured, it was a clean tackle. But if you actually watch it, the player went into his planted foot with his other leg, right into his ankle too. He's not faking an injury. Marcus Rashford played through a broken back and through floating bones in his feet. He's not faking an injury. It's crazy to claim these kinds of things. I never claim that about any player at United, no matter who. It would be absolutely ridiculous to suggest something like that about someone, but it kind of shows you the undertones of it. And at times, if I'm overly defensive of him, it's mostly because of that, because I see a lot of seriously problematic undertones to some of the things that get leveled at him over time.
James, there's also things that we can't say on this podcast give a entirely different context to a lot of what goes on, and that contribute towards the certain mental state of players that as you become aware of certain information, things make more sense. And so, you know, I haven't got the approval to say that, so I'm not going to say exactly, you know, but there's reasons, there's things going on that have gone on that are absolutely indefensible. You saw that Schweinsteiger clip, right? You know, United can be extremely cruel to people and do things that are not consistent with a football club that has a moral compass in how they treat people. And footballers, like everyone else, are human beings. You know, like, I disagreed with how they handled, when Ten Hag handled Sancho. Right or wrong, I don't think you should have went public. Jaden had his own issues the season before. I just feel that I understand if you don't have all the information why you might have an opinion a certain way, but one of the reasons why I am not as critical as Rashford as the way people would like is because of some of the stuff that we know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all. And that's all I ask for people is if you understand that it's not a bias based on anything but information. And information gives you an opinion. I base most of my opinions off the information that I am presented. And in some instances, that's a lot more than I can say on many different fronts. But so I agree. I think, you and I are in kind of the same boat there. And it's the only reason it kind of keeps coming up. And it's the same information for me that led me to defend Harry Maguire for a long time in terms of his professionalism, things like that. The things I heard about him were impressive. And something that I think is to be respected. In terms of the team and we're discussing with Hoyland, I think the main thing, my point on it was that by not having it sorted out at a club level, when you see, you know, Jason Wilcox coming in and what they're trying to do is bring this kind of this game state way of, not game state way, but this specific way of doing things, a specific way of playing, a specific way of organizing, a specific, you know, style, what have you. My point on the 400 million, there's a lot of good players in there, but there's not a formula at the end of it where you can say, that's what we're doing. I still have no idea how all these pieces fit together. I have no idea when I look at Rasmus Hojlund, how he fits with Garnacho and Rashford, because it is a problem, like you said, and a lot of it's not, you know, his fault. A lot of it's not the winger's fault. It's just how they play and how you fit them all in together and how you approach things and how you run it. You know, Rasmus Højlund, in a lot of instances, you'd probably look a lot better if that was Harry Kane, not Rasmus Højlund, in terms of how they were playing, in terms of the style, in terms of someone like Kane who would come way back out to contribute into the buildup and to be quite a bit more all-arounder and have your wingers run by him. It's the same way that Kane played with, you know, Son. That relationship would be very similar to how Kane would play with someone like Garnacho or Rashford. But you don't see a cohesion that has come together in this team to say that's what we're doing. And that can be hard to come back from, right or wrong, after a lot of money has been spent. And they may be looking at it and saying, we kind of have to tear this all up. Anything that's been moving forward, we got to tear it all up. And so that can lead to a simple conclusion that you have to start over with the manager too. So there's just a lot of things working against Ten Hag being the guy for the future, you know, at this point in time there.
Let me ask you a question on that, right? Yeah. So I was saying to you that if you'd have said to me 2 years ago, you know, when Ten Hag took the job, that he'd finish third, you know, get to two cup finals, win the cup, win a trophy, I'd be happy, right? And which, you know, speaking from a general perspective, you know, I'm not seeing the details, I probably would have said, you know, if the United get all these injuries this season, they don't back him in January and all that, I could see where United would be in the situation they're in. The problem is the reality of you experience that is very different. Now, realistically, if United sack Ten Hag and hire a new manager, there's no way they're winning the league next season. Right.
Yeah. 100%.
And the struggle to finish top four.
Yeah, I agree.
I want you to think about what would happen to a De Zerbi or to a Southgate or to a, you know, Potter struggling to finish top four. They are going to get destroyed. Yeah. Right. No one is going to turn around and adjust their expectations. This is why I would worry about a guy like that. You know, they don't have a resume that gives you confidence that says they know what they're doing. And any Man United manager coming into a football club that's, you know, this is what they do, they're halfway through the jigsaw, they tear it up, right, let's start again. And then we're trying to put the jigsaw together with parts that don't fit because they're for a different jigsaw, right? And then, of course, you're wondering why you have no playing style. You have no playing style because you can't get a playing style out of players that don't have the skill set to play the way that the manager wants to play. You know, they've never completely committed to giving a manager those players to that results. I mean, Ralph Rangnick pointed out the obvious when he said this. Yeah. So what do you do? How do you bring a manager in and then say to fans, okay, but this guy, you know, if he finishes top four next season, it's a miracle. Adjust your expectations, because the reality of living that week in, week out will be totally different. And whoever comes in like that is going to get destroyed.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about it is, how do I put this properly? If they change the manager, that's probably exactly what they're going to have to do, is through briefings, through articles, through things that they say to journalists, which is how things work, to get kind of the stories out there and all of that. Because Jim Ratcliffe's not going to stand there and say, we probably won't get Champions League next year.
Okay.
He's not going to come out and do that, right?
So how do you say players on that premise too, saying we'll be lucky if we finish top four?
Young. You have to sign young players. And I honestly think that this is where the focus is going to be, is on signing young players from around the league, from around places where you can go. You know, when you talk about a player like Jarrod Braithwaite, if you tell him, you know, this is multiple years that you're going through all of this, that we're building something, it does make it harder. Chelsea were able to buy a lot of young players that wouldn't say they've all worked out, but they were able to spend an enormous amount of money, buy a lot of young players. I don't know what the premise of that was exactly at the time or what it is now. And I'm not saying it's worked out, but either way, I think that it's no matter what happens for United to get where they need to be in the long run, its fans are going to have to stomach the difficulties and maybe a slightly different definition of success for at least 1 to 2 years. than they might be hoping for. And they're going to have to. I can't see a way around it. I don't know what else to say about it. There is no world with any manager that next season we're winning a bunch of trophies and it's all going to be okay. There's just no world.
The best player in that market is cutthroat. I mean,
I know.
Yeah. Where's Andre going? It's going to Real Madrid, right? Yeah. Not going to Man United. The best young players. You know, City, they send the young Argentinian kid, 17, leaving the river, comes over, right? They're already knee-deep in that market, right? Mm-hmm. And when these amazing young players, the ones that will really transform you, have a choice between United, City, you know, Real Madrid, you're not getting those players, you know? Yeah. So you're relying on trying to bring them through your own academy. And I remember when Carlos Queiroz went to Real Madrid, and they asked him about this, about the policy of playing young players, but still having a demand to win trophies. The Zidane and Pavons, right? And he goes, problem is the Pavons have to be some of the best kids in the world, right? For that to happen. You can't have a team where, you know, you're filled with young players that make young player mistakes who get crucified by whether they make those mistakes or not. Because the fans, you know, we've got people that Garnacho goes 3 games without scoring a goal, they'll call him shit, right? I mean, this is insane. Mm-hmm. This is what you deal with. I mean, predict Man U will get this soon, right? I've already seen it. Yep. Where you say, oh, you know, Man, he's doing this in games. You know, I know he's good on the ball, but inevitably this happens because people judge their opinions based on the last 90 minutes they saw, right? And then they'll change them next week, and they'll change them next week. And at United, that's very difficult. You can develop a Brighton where you can make all these mistakes without being crucified, but at United, you can't. So you may be 19 at Manchester United, but you're going to get treated like you're 26. And that is a really, really risky strategy because if you look at it, 90% of young players don't fulfill their potential.
Yeah. Right?
Because the next jump, this is why there are so a dearth of really true world-class players, is really hard. And then you are in an Arsenal situation where their best young players, they were getting picked off. Fabregas, you know, they had to sell their because they weren't competitive. So United won't be able to keep really, really good young players. Out of 10 of them, maybe 2 will reach their potential. They'll get picked off. And so this is United will have this problem with Garnacho if they don't compete. I mean, it's really difficult to turn around to these players and say, hey, look, we're 3 years away from competing for a title. Agent, get me the fuck out of here. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, this is a really difficult thing to do. And I don't know if you can do this with signing solely young potential.
And and to be clear on the young players, there's obviously
I don't know if they can do it.
Yeah, and there's you know the other bracket of players that you're taking, you know, Gerard Braithwaite, Olise, these types of players too that are Premier League proven, that have been in the league. They're not ones where you're questioning whether they're going to make it as a Premier League player, but whether they're going to be, of course, they still have to come around and be top level. And what you can often offer them, which I think is still an advantage of Manchester United in general, is the size and exposure of the club in comparison to others and the minutes. And that's one of the things that they may not get at somewhere like, you know, if Michael Olise signs for Manchester City, how much is he going to play? Not a lot. He's not going to play that much. Maybe. Well, he might play a lot depending on how they have to shake things up. Unless but obviously, those are these are the big discussions that have to be had kind of across the board, though.
Would you take Olise over Garnacho?
I would say that I would absolutely be benching Rashford and Garnacho a lot more often.
You have
than
no
they
chance
get
that here that happening, mate.
They have to figure out how to get more players in. We have to have better players than Antony as our fourth forward. No matter what, that's going to happen. If we want to sign a Benjamin Sesko, it's going to be the same discussion. How do we make sure that that person gets enough games? Because why would they come here for that? And that's going to be a problem across there, you know, especially where, because somehow you have to be able to have 4 or 5 good forwards, and we don't have it. 4 or 5 good forwards, we have 3. That's it, and it is dead after that.
I completely agree with you. United need another, but I don't understand Olise. I don't. First of all, Garnacho doesn't even want to be taken off in a game with 10 minutes to go. So the idea
have to sort that out.
I know, but this is a big problem, right? Because he is one young player that lots of other top clubs in the world would snatch, right? No problems. He's exceptional talent. Given United's problems in every other position, PSR, at least it would be the bottom for me, right? I would definitely look at a striker that could play right, could play left, like a Daniel Malin or something that, you know, you can get the game time, get him to play with, in different positions. And partly because of what I was saying earlier, where it's really hard to integrate a number nine into a position where your wingers are inverted. So I would be looking at a striker that could play also out wide, so you can get him the game time, right? So, but bringing in a guy like Olise, you have to make a choice. Either Garnacho or Olise is your right winger. And you will not be able to go to Garnacho and say, you're being relegated to second choice, you're on the bench. I know you played all this time. I mean, there's no chance. And I don't know how to go to Marcus Rashford, you know, given that he's one of the highest paid players on the club, and say, you're sitting on the bench. I'm not saying they don't need the options. They do. They badly need other players, alternatives. They also have an £85 million right winger. They have to do something with Jadon Sancho, right? That has to be decided. Yeah. And to me, it's like they badly need fullbacks. They badly need quality fullbacks. They badly need a quality left back and a quality right back. They badly need central defenders. They badly need another midfielder, right? And to me, Olise is as confusing as Mason Mount.
I can see that. I think that where I have a different view on the squad building aspects of it is that they have nobody like him. They have nobody like him. He can be kind of what Jadon Sancho should have been. Obviously, you do have to sort all those things out because you have Jadon Sancho, you have Mason Greenwood still to be sorted out.
Seriously, that's an honest question because I don't watch him enough.
He's a good player that I think he's actually, when I look at him, funnily enough, I think he's if Antony was actually up to the level that he should be, where you see he's more, can be more pass first, can be more flexible in the way that he does things. He's bigger, he's more physical in a lot of respects. He's a player that when I compare him to Rashford and Garnacho, who both tend to dribble into the box, try to get in and score, and that's just the way that they do things. Olise puts in 2-3 times the number of crosses, even in a lower possession team. And they don't have that. They have nobody who will do that right now. Antony could have and should have been that guy, right? He should have been the guy where, if you watch Ten Hag teams in the past, you know, gets in, cross the back post, all of that. But he's just not been up to the level of it. Olise, to me, is that guy who would offer you something different where, you know, you could play then, you know, your two other forwards a little closer together. And he's going to be creating some spaces and doing things. He's going to be more in alignment with having fullbacks that actually overlap because he's going to be working with them, you know, on that aspect. I think he brings, again, what Antony should have brought to this team and maybe even what Sancho should have brought to the team, but they were both unable to. And that's what I see in him. And I think it's something we really lack in the forwards that every other big club that's competitive right now has these kind of creative forwards in addition to just not just three guys who are single-minded on getting to the goal. You know what I mean?
The thing is, mate, for me, if you're going to play inverted wingers, right footer on the left and the left footer on the right, you're not playing them so they put balls in the box because you know that they're going to cut inside and shoot. That's why they're there. If you want players, wingers that put the ball in the box, you reverse them. You put Antony right on the left, and you put Rashford on the right because inevitably they're going to go wide and they're not in a position to shoot. They're going to put the ball across the box. If you play those, when Antony cuts inside, there's no place for a cross. It's narrow. So he's going to shoot, right? And in his defense, same with Rashford, you know, Doku hadn't scored a goal or got an assist for months.
Yeah.
This is the thing. When was the last good game you saw Grealish have? You know, you know, Foden is technically very, very good, but he scored a hat-trick against United, cutting inside and shooting, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, he ruined Lindelof because Lindelof's not a left-back, right? So, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, Foden's goal against Real Madrid, ping top corner, right, cutting inside, shooting. If you want your wingers to deliver balls for your striker, you have to reverse them because if you ask a right footer to play on the left, they're going to play in this space, not this space, this space. And when they come in here, there's no place for a cross. Now, well, you said you need your fullbacks overlapping, right? See Luke Shaw Wolves overlapping ball across. The problem is you're not getting that when you've got a right footer, left back, playing at left back, because they're going to do exactly the same thing as a winger. They're going to cut back. Dalot, goal at the weekend, overlapping fullback, on a strong foot, ball across the box, tapped in. Wan-Bissaka can't give you that.
Yeah, look, and I completely agree with you in terms of there being bigger priorities in certain areas. There's no doubt about that. You know, the midfield is a Casemiro's replacement to me is as high up on the list as anything could ever be. Because if you don't get Kobbie Mainoo a great partner in there, he's never going to make it to the level that he should. He will never get there. That midfield has to be sorted out, and he needs the help that he needs. And I think that would be my first priority, because you do have to still control and win the games from the midfield. That's how every great team has been built. At the back, obviously, given the injury issues, you have to have a left back, and you're going to have to sign at minimum one top-level center back. I agree in this respect. You have to have a left back next season. You have to have another top-level center back in next season, and you have to sort out the Casemiro position. Before you think about anything else, those have to be done. A player like Olise, someone like that, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it at all. And it may be a summer too soon. Yeah.
Go back to that Real Madrid City game, first goal.
Yeah.
In the first leg, right? It happened because they were playing a fullback at right back, Akanji.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if Kyle Walker's in that right back position, right? Well, I think it was the second goal Rodrigo scored where it slipped under the keeper, right? That happens because you're playing center backs or full back, right?
Yeah,
that has consequences, right? And I agree with you. I mean, if you look at the City Chelsea game, right, when Chelsea almost equalized, Kyle Walker runs back and Mudrick pushes him over. That's a foul that Rashford didn't get, by the way, in the derby.
Yep.
Right? But that is such a key position for how you attack and how you defend. And I agree with you. I think that, you know, playing full centre backs or right back is or left back is a huge problem. But I don't know how you do it when so many managers now play these inverted wingers.
Yeah, and that's, of course, the other question where some of it's like, we don't know. Because how are we going to play next year? We have no idea yet, right? This is where, you know, obviously the big remit of Jason Wilcox, Omar Berada, and Dan Ashworth when he joins is on setting up the team in the way that we've spoken about so many times and Ralph talked about and all the things that we know of a top-down structure in terms of this is what we're doing and how we're doing things. And so a lot of it's up in the air. And what I do see is that there's a really wide kind of net that's been cast when it comes to United presently in terms of scouting, you know, looking at players, contacting players, all of that, where you could say, I don't see how all this fits together. And it's true, but I think it's because we don't know yet exactly how we're going to do things. I mean, Jason Wilcox is just starting, and I think it's probably worthwhile to discuss that, but you know, he's just starting now to look at it, to look at how Ten Hag is playing. I think they've decided how they want to play, but I think, you know, to look at how it's being coached right now, how, you know, they're running through training, how they're setting things up, how the players suit all of this. With all of that, it's not just decisions on the manager. It's decisions on which players are suited to it and which aren't, which players are going to have a role and which aren't. I do see a world where when they build a team moving forward in the right way, I don't know that Rasmus Højlund, Alejandro Garnacho, and Marcus Rashford all fit together in their vision of the best team moving forward, right? I don't know how any of it, you know, I don't know. We obviously don't see a world right now where Bruno Fernandes, Mason Mount, and Kobbie Mainoo fit together. So I don't know what's going to happen there. There's so many different, you know, aspects to this that they have to get to work on now to start pushing things ahead. And that's really the you know, the remit now of Jason Wilcox coming in with or without any influence from Dan Ashworth, you know, obviously officially absolutely zero influence of any kind, but definitely some influence from Omar Berada in terms of how they're doing all of this and how they're carrying this out. And I think right now everything's kind of going according to the way I have understood things to be going, which was that Ineos know they have to make some really big decisions here now on players, on all of it, but also obviously, you know, on the manager, the present manager, and any potential managers that they would want to bring in. Because it would be easy, but also very dangerous for Ineos to say, like we've talked about, to say, we're going to sack Ten Hag and bring in Potter, and that's what we want to do. And that's a very dangerous way to go about doing things, and that's not what they're doing. Fortunately, in this respect, they're bringing in Wilcox to look at it and say, what's your assessment of it? Because they've made their own assessments of things. I can guarantee you that 100%. They have made their own assessments of things. No matter what anybody says, they have made their own assessments and things that they're going to do and decisions that they're going to, that they would take. But they have this person here now who has started, who is present, and will be able to look at it and tell them whether he agrees with their assessments, whether he disagrees with their assessments. If they have names they want to replace the manager with, they're going to run them by him and have him look at it and potentially even contact and talk to people if it gets to that point in time where they want to do that, so that they feel like they're going to make the right decision from a football executive standpoint, which is, of course, how it should be.
Yeah.
Time is of the essence, obviously. It's late, you know. Unfortunately, they only got in 2 months ago. And you know, now work has to really, really get going. So, you know, that's kind of what's going to be happening.
One thing I think is very telling is the fact that Jim Ratcliffe could have said numerous times that they're 100% behind Ten Hag and that he'll be here next season. I mean, he's obviously aware of a lot of the discussions and the speculation. And if it was me and this guy was managing my football club and I was 100% committed to him, I would end that speculation immediately by coming out and saying, look, Erik ten Hag will be our manager this next season, no matter what happens between now and the end of the season. But they haven't done that, right? Now, obviously, those discussions have taken place with Ratcliffe and with other people. I think, you know, it is really important, and we've said this before, that whatever evaluation is made, there's a very clear understanding why failure happened. Right, which failure, you know, is not an event, it's a process. It belongs to everybody, right? And then, you know, identifying a problem is the easy part. Identifying a solution is the difficult part. And that's the part where, you know, any of us, I've read some things, and I don't know how true this is, you know, they're reluctant to sack Ten Hag, partly because there is no obvious alternative. And that, to me, is a bit chicken.
Yeah, I would agree with that if it's true, by the way.
Yeah, because it's easy to say, oh, well, we don't want to make a decision because it doesn't work out, and we get criticized. And I think that it's...
You've already lost, I think, when you do that. You know what I mean? Like, you've already lost. Once you do that...
I'm not thinking that. I'm here for lack of a better option. Like, that's just... I don't know.
Yeah, you tell it to your wife next time, you know? I'm not leaving you because I don't know if I'll find anyone better. Yeah. That's going to go over well.
Yes. Yeah. might be an element of truth to that, mind you.
Just don't tell her that. That's the thing.
I guarantee you she doesn't listen to this, mate. Maybe she's telling her boyfriend the same thing. I don't know. Thomas Tuchel being mentioned as a potential replacement. German's been talking about that this morning, saying that he would be interested. I've never been 100% convinced by Tuchel. I know he obviously won the Champions League with Chelsea, fantastic. But I don't think he was exceptional at Dortmund. I don't think he was exceptional at PSG. He has obviously been exceptional at Bayern. Although I would accept that Leverkusen were magnificent. Might be a better option than Ten Hag, but I just feel, James, that whoever comes in after Ten Hag will end up getting sacked too, because I feel that they're going to get slaughtered over the fact that United are not going to be anywhere near a title race next season. And these fans, players that come in, you know, all that, a lot of these people that make noise online will make zero allowance for this. They're going to expect immediate results. Any of us, thought any of us were going to fix everything. You all want the Ten Hag sack because it's plastic market. Look at this guy's had three shit games. This is exactly how it's going to go.
I know. And there's no way around it, unfortunately, for them. And I think they probably understand that. I think that the people they're bringing in are experienced enough to understand that at the executive level, that it's really going to be on the front, on the outside, it's certainly going to appear pretty messy, you know, the next year, the next 18 months, 2 years. I could see a world where the next person they hire, no matter what, gets sacked. You know, the issue with the there's no one better available or something like that is, when is there, you know, someone really explicitly available that's better? How many managers are there in the world where, you know, they're a guaranteed option? Ancelotti, Pep, Klopp, you're not getting any of them.
Maybe
it's not happening. Maybe that's it. And they are not interested in this position. They're not interested in coming here. They have jobs at the biggest clubs in the world. And until you are back to being one of the most successful clubs in the world, you're not going to get those kind of guys. You know, and so it's going to be, what's that?
After two games, you had the English media criticizing Ten Hag's clothes, his accent, the language, you know, barrier.
Well, he did wear a tan suit after all, you know.
Yeah. Alison Rudd. I mean, but imagine, by the way, if it was a female being criticized like that. I'm not doing this.
That's crazy.
You counterfactual author, but that is, to me, unacceptable. You know, you criticize the guy for whatever you want, you know, that's related to football. But when you're getting into personal attacks over his clothes, his accent, that's scandalous. Like, that is totally unprofessional. And that is an illustration of what happens at Manchester United. This is also something, and we mentioned this before, that Omar Barat is going to have to get used to. You know, there's no more anonymity, mate. That Dan Iceberg's going to have to get used to. There's no more anonymity. Jason Wilcox, you know, no more anonymity. You're going to be, you know, ask John Murta. I mean, John Murta might have been the most talked about non-director of football, director of football in the league. I mean, and this is where it changes completely. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to this, but I think that it is that United have a big problem in how they go about making these changes. And bringing in new players next season on the premise that we're still 2-3 years away from winning league. Players don't want to wait. Top players won't wait. They have other options, and I don't know how you do it. And you get, you know, young players, but young players are risky, you know, because and on Branthwaite, I think he has potential, but I've watched him a lot of times this season, mate, and I am not 100% convinced. I mean, he did not convince me in the United games. You know, I thought Garnacho ruined him a few times. I watched him in the when Everton lost 5-0 there. You know, he was really poor. Like, you know, at Everton, you're not getting that scrutiny. You do out at United, God help you. You know, I mean, Willie Kambala was getting ruined because of Bournemouth. I mean, it's
you need leadership. It, yeah.
You need leadership badly in that defense. And Branthwaite's a young player, and United need a top-level central defender that knows how to communicate and organize and bring composure. I don't know if that's there. I want to ask you quickly about the Antony reaction, because he's been taking a lot of heat for it. And here's what I'm going to say, mate, on this, okay? Because Coventry have been really infantilized in all of this coverage. Coventry are a really good football club, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not idiots. They're not Newport County, you know, where they're a non-league team or a league 2-2 team, where it really is David versus Goliath. I mean, they are obviously bigger and should be winning the game comfortably, but they're playing in the Championship, which is a really good standard of football. And who knows what goes on in a game between players that are mouthing each other, that are needling each other, that are shit to each other. And so sometimes players give it back and forth. I don't know if Antony was reacting to something that was said to him before, which is possible, right? And of course, you know, that will not be given context. I'm not saying he should have done it, but this pearl clutching over oh, the offside, or fell out of love with football. As I said on Twitter, you know, football clubs are owned by people chopping people's heads off, right? Football clubs are owned by people funding war crimes, you know, funding famines in Yemen. They're, you know, these are people that Pablo Escobar owned football clubs. The world governing body's up to its neck in corruption. You have players being jailed for drug dealing. You know, you have players that have committed murder, you know, vehicular manslaughter. You've got players that, you know, the pedophiles the clubs have protected, summary executions in a football stadium in Chile, players executed for scoring own goals, and they're competing to play against the team that's facing 115 charges for cheating, but this is the moment that tips you over the edge. I mean, what absolute bollocks.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I know why most people are bringing these kinds of things up, the offsides, the all of it, is because it's, you know, it's the same anyone but United kind of behavior that has been for a long time and will always remain. And when United win, it's going to get worse. And the more they win, the worse it'll get. For me, it's a little embarrassing only from the standpoint of, you know, just it's more embarrassing when somebody who's kind of crap, has been crap, is kind of giving it, you know, giving it in that respect. That's how it comes across to me. You know, Harry Maguire went over and shook hands immediately afterwards and all of that, a little bit of a different reaction. All I would say is that, you know, I don't know. I don't want to police sell it. It doesn't seem like a celebration, you know.
I was more embarrassed about the celebrations at Newport than anything.
Yeah, well, I agree with that too, you know, but that's sort of my point is it's like, I guess it's, you know, I was always taught to just like act like you've been there, you know, especially when you're dealing with your opponent. You can celebrate and have as much fun as you want with your fans and with all that kind of thing has always been fine. I don't know. I've never been one for, you know, there's physicality, there's running, you know, there's the things that you do in a game, with regards to your opponent. I've never been a fan of anything outside of that when it comes to your opponents.
Yeah,
it's just me personally. That's all I would say about it. That's just a personal opinion though.
If two players are giving each other grief verbally, and it's been going on all game, you know, the levels are irrelevant. That's an issue between human beings, right? That's really not, I don't know. It's, you know, I agree there's a level of respect. I don't think you should have done it. I don't think the nation should be up in arms about it. And the only thing that concerns me, of course, will be the consequence, you know, getting this offside, is that now any 50-50.
We're not going to get a call. Right away.
Jack Grealish handles the ball in the box, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, one's given a penalty. No one mentions it, like, you know, and one isn't, you know, of course, because and so of course United will pay for this. But I don't have a lot of confidence to win the cup final anyway, which even if they get a number of players back, but we shall see, my friend. All right, do we have anything else before we go?
No, that's it. Obviously, I think we probably will get some decent. There's probably going to be a fair bit of stories and news over the next bit to keep discussing now that Wilcox has started and what we've seen. Because I imagine this is sort of the start of Ineos trying to get justification validly, I think, for the decisions they're going to be making over the next few weeks, either direction. On manager, players, all of that. Now you have kind of the base laid for that. So I think things will probably get rather interesting, especially because in a lot of respects, the season's pretty much over until that cup final. The rest of these games are rather pointless. So I think it's going to be a little bit busy.
Yeah, I think. Well, we just one quick point before I go, folks. We did an interview on Friday with Nora Dean Chowdhury, which was about Inshallah Manchester United. If you have a unique story about your identity and Manchester United and how that's transcended certain rivalries or certain personal issues in your life or whatever, how Manchester United identity has unified in conflict areas and whatever, please reach out to me, beyondthepitch@gmail.com. I'm always interested in hearing the stories of fans of how Manchester United have transcended boundaries and a unique perspective in your life. I don't care what it is, I'd love to hear from you because I'm interested in having those conversations. So please reach out to me if you know someone who has a unique story like that, or you may be you. So beyondthepitch@gmail.com. All right, GMD, thanks, mate. Take it easy. And thanks to all for downloading the podcast, for following us as usual. And don't forget, James is a closet Liverpool fan, so he constantly gets accused of.
Don't forget.
It's funny. You can make an acknowledgement and say someone is good. It doesn't mean I enjoy them being good. It doesn't mean that I've celebrated, but basically the acknowledgement, you know, the truth, you know, is
not allowed.
A while ago, and people accused me of being a City fan. Like,
I know.
I have two eyes. Doesn't mean I enjoy them being good, but, you know, anyway. All right, man. Take it easy, James.
See you later.
See you, mate.